Pope Francis sets off today for the Democratic Republic of Congo and South Sudan in what he's calling a pilgrimage of peace. His visit to Africa follows in the footsteps of others, government officials from China and Russia trying to foster closer ties and gain influence there.
The U.S. is also showing up. Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, just spent nearly 2 weeks in Zambia, Senegal, and South Africa. Her message is that the continent will shape the global economy and its future. And so now let's talk about Africa's economy, its growing middle class, and the role of the United States. We're joined by Yinka Adegoke. He's Africa editor at Semaphore in New York. And Emmanuel Akinwotu, NPR correspondent in West Africa, and he's in Lagos, Nigeria. Welcome to you both.
Hi. Glad to be on.
Yinka, Janet Yellen's trip was the most recent effort to strengthen economic ties, trade ties between the U.S. and Africa. Just to step back, what has that relationship looked like in the last few years?
Well, it has been one where the United States hasn't always been fully engaged. Africa and specific African countries have been just seen as, you know, strategic opportunities and strategic partners in geopolitical machinations, if you like, rather than significant economic partners. What the Biden administration seems to be trying to do is to shift that thinking to be more engaged on the continent in an economic sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Africa has, of course, a growing middle class, about 1 in 3 people on the continent, according to the African Development Bank. Yinka, what is at stake for them?
What's at stake for ordinary Africans is basically development. As we all know, it's the youngest continent in terms of the average age of people there. More than 60% of people there are under the age of 25. So if you're a president or a leader in any country, you are constantly thinking about how to make sure that there can be employment and opportunity for your population. And the United States, regardless of how you might position it today, is still the world's largest economy, still has huge influence around the world. And having a partner in your country that can help enable that will always be important.
And Emmanuel, what are your thoughts as far as the stakes for, you know, this growing middle class in Africa?
Yinka's absolutely right. Development is incredibly important. Ordinary Africans are, you know, living in the fastest growing continent in the world, living in largely low-income countries that are trying to accelerate development for young populations. You know, people need jobs, people need better infrastructure, and are trying to improve the quality of their lives. And so that's really like the prism that African countries are on the whole viewing relationships with the U.S. and other countries.
Now, President Biden plans to follow up on this Yellen visit by visiting Africa himself later this year. How do African governments think about this coming Biden trip, Emmanuel?
I think on the whole, you know, it's welcome. You know, not all African countries enjoy great ties with the U.S., but overall, it's an important thing for the U.S. to be better engaged, to improve trade with many African countries, and Biden coming here would cement that. I think that, you know, expectations with the U.S. government from a lot of African countries have been fairly low. Mm. Under President Obama, I think people expected that there would be better engagement with Africa and better trade ties and investment. Yes. And then obviously you had President Trump, which was not exactly the most kind of graceful leader when it came to kind of African affairs. So I think what many governments will anticipate is, you know, this renewed engagement by U.S. officials. And in President Biden's visit, what does it practically lead to? What will change? And that kind of remains to be seen.
That point about U.S. officials is really important. That, yes, sure, President Biden visiting is really significant, right? But I know you're going to bring this up, Scott, but we must mention the elephant in the room, which is China. And that's
yes.
One of the key issues that the U.S. government is naturally concerned about, because China has, over the last 30 years, but particularly in the last 20, has really been focused on partnering with African countries, building infrastructure, offering loans, this whole range of partnership. But, you know, there have been lots of questions about their intent. The point is, for the African governments, they've been more interested in the fact that China has been engaged. and the United States hasn't. So what President Biden's administration sees is that they can't just come in and dip in and dip out, just like what Emmanuel was saying about the high hopes that many African governments would have had during the Obama years. When you speak to people in this administration, they really, particularly people who are obviously sort of Africa policy leaders, they have the ear of the president, and the engagement is far more in-depth and is meant to be persistent.
And Emmanuel, can I ask about this long-term engagement we have seen from China? I lived there for a number of years, and it had regular kind of global conferences with African leaders. I was in Nairobi a decade ago where people were raving about Chinese state-owned companies because they get things done, right? They help to build the roads or the ports or the infrastructure much more efficiently than, say, a partner like the World Bank. I'm curious, Emmanuel, how do you sense the conversation about Chinese investments?
You know, the U.S. is obviously coming here and, in a way, trying to play diplomatic catch-up. But the kind of visibility of Chinese investment, trade, loans is kind of everywhere you look. I'm here in Lagos, and a few days ago, the new deep sea port, largely funded by China and Singaporean investment, and investment from Nigeria, it just opened, and a Chinese company owns a majority stake. The new train lines, terminals, these things are visible signs of the relationship, close economic relationship between Nigeria and China. And overall, what you can say is that China has a very visible economic presence in the continent, very visible relationships in terms of the impact of its loans and infrastructure projects. But at the same time, that does also kind of come with the fact that these deals are quite opaque. And I think where the US is coming in now is with a kind of question of what does the US offer African countries that either matches or seeks to try to compete with the economic influence China has here. We saw that Janet Yellen went to Zambia, and it seemed like that was maybe designed to highlight the challenges that Zambia has had with Chinese debt. Zambia is maybe one of the countries that has borrowed the most as a proportion of their GDP from China, and defaulted on a loan a few years ago, and are currently trying to renegotiate some of their loans.
And briefly, if I can just ask you about the economic situation going forward in 2023, we see oil prices are high, natural gas prices are high. Africa has many countries that are significant producers. At the same time, food prices are high. There's a global food shortage as the war in Ukraine has cut grain exports from Ukraine. Just briefly, how might that play out in 2023? Inka, maybe starting with you.
Yeah, I mean, food inflation is definitely a huge challenge. And it's the same problem with energy, particularly in countries that are not, you know, oil producers, but even those that are oil producers. If you think about a country like Nigeria, that is supposedly the continent's largest oil producer, doesn't refine its own oil and ends up having to import oil. So, you know, these things are huge challenges for most of these countries. There's also plenty of hope in terms of some economies are also ironically going to be boosted by bringing oil and gas services online, particularly in Senegal, which is going to be the continent's fastest growing economy and one of the fastest growing in the world. Same in Niger. You know, one of the stories that keeps on happening is you suddenly realize the potential of many of these countries. The problem has been, as we were saying earlier, the lack of infrastructure or the lack of development of certain services. And more governments are getting around to actually getting this stuff online now. Senegal, Niger, even DR Congo, which is dealing with, you know, conflict in the eastern part of the country. Some countries will benefit from that, although increasingly the conversation is about for Africa not to just be this exporter of raw materials, but to think about ways to benefit more greatly from the resources that it produces.
And Emmanuel, your thoughts?
Just to chime in with what Iyinka said, it's hard to be here and not see the daily impact of food inflation. And, you know, we've seen these pressures kind of come to a boiling point in countries like Sierra Leone, where there's been huge cost of living crisis, protests, and they've been quite brutally repressed. I think the kind of immediate aim is, for a lot of countries, is to kind of like reduce inflation. It seems a lot of countries are increasing interest rates in response to that, and that's coming with pressures too. So I think, yeah, overall, it's clearly a difficult outlook for quite a few countries, but there's also a lot of potential this year. I don't want to kind of overgeneralize, but yeah, in general, it seems like those are the challenges countries are grappling with.
That's Emmanuel Akinwotu, NPR's West Africa correspondent in Lagos, Nigeria, and Yinka Adegoke, Africa editor at Semaphore in New York. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.